I really appreciate the internet, especially when we were gone, because while we were away, there was so much news that was happening in the world. I'm kind of a news junkie. I like to know what's going on in and around us, and especially with the nations. Although we might have been in Fairmont Springs with my parents for a few days before heading into Alberta, we still heard what was going on in the world and across our nation. News stories from the cleaning power of Lysol. Did you know it's able to even kill the Ebola virus? Suddenly that came on the news, and I was like, wow. To stories of shootings in yet another secondary school just south of us in Washington State. All the way to stories of our Canadian fighter jets departing from Cold Lake, Alberta, for Iraq. To Canadian soldiers being targeted in Quebec, they're run over, and in our nation's capital, while guarding a memorial, being shot as an honor guard. Now, it is indeed our media's job to inform, but it's also the media's job to sell news and to make headlines. And that can sculpt our reality in certain ways, so much so that it forms our perception, public's perception, and therefore it sculpts our understanding of what's really going on. It sculpts our reality. We fear of infectious, exotic, tropical diseases like Ebola, for example. This isn't the first time that Lysol has capitalized on fear of disease to sell its product. In 1918, the company's previous owners touted the disinfectant as a means of eliminating the Spanish flu. If they had websites back then, they would have posted, "Hey, Lysol clears the Spanish flu." Now, Dr. El Sayed, an epidemiologist at Columbia University, he said this, "I think this is a corporation riding on false fears of an epidemic to sell its product, thus reinforcing those fears." It's a great marketing scheme. Al Sayed pointed out that while Lysol would kill any trace of Ebola on non-porous surfaces in hospitals, there is no evidence that a homeowner's use of Lysol would lower the already minimal risk of catching the disease outside of a medical facility. Did you catch what I said? They're just trying to sell product based upon your fear. Yet, I bet the stock price of Lysol's parent company went up after news reports of the disease hit the airwaves. And sure enough, I went online, what is the parent company of Lysol, and I saw the parent company stock just rocket during the summertime when this news erupted. Interesting, hey? Now, we also fear random and senseless acts of violence. We fear war. We fear religious and political fanatics. One of the headlines that hit home for me was the news story that CBC had fired one of the radio stars, Gian Gomeshi. And I'm sure you've kind of been sickened by what you've heard over the radio and what you've seen on the National or on CBC. He was accused of abusing former girlfriends or women in past relationships, and he's been let go by our national broadcaster. And he's begun a social media and legal chess match with the corporation. Fearing for his future employability and reputation, Gian Gomeshi has got on social media and gave his side of the story pretty quickly. He wanted to share what was going on in his own personal life. And he said that our personal life should have nothing to do with our employment. And in some respects, I agree. But in some respects, we also understand that he is on national radio and he actually portrays a certain image. And we have to keep in mind that no charges have been pressed yet. The police have just started an investigation. So, for any fair and judicious person, it would seem odd that we hadn't yet heard anything from the other side of this sordid tale. But now, stories are now coming to light, as we've seen over this past week. So as people came to Gian's side, calling CBC the cold corporation and Gian the victim, nothing had formally been heard from Gian's past girlfriends. But now the stories are now trickling to the surface. And at least three people have come forward to share their stories with the police. Now, perhaps it's this victim's fear of being ignored or sidelined or chastised for speaking out, whether it's online or in real life. Reliving or reopening past abuses or hurts can be quite painful for the victims. And so you'd wonder what do they have to gain through coming forward and sharing their stories, except maybe some freedom? I mean, Gomeshi is a Canadian celebrity, and getting into a public dispute with him might actually be quite intimidating for a guy who has the resources that he does. Especially for those who work in the small world of entertainment, the fear of retaliation or retribution is very real. What will happen if I tell somebody? What will he fire my way? Maybe a defamation suit. I don't want to be sued. And I don't want the whole world to know what's going on in my personal life. These are very valid fears. All of the fears that we've talked about already are valid fears. Jesus, though, speaks to all who fear. It's a normal response to danger. Yet Jesus talks about how we should also have faith and trust in him, because the fears shouldn't become idols that guide us and direct us in our lives. I love how today's passage talks about the disciples' fear. Now, if you haven't yet turned to today's passage, I invite you to go with me into the Bible and turn to Mark 4, verses 35 to 41. And if you didn't bring your Bible, there should be a pew Bible in front of you. And thank you again, Savannah, for that wonderful reading. Just to give you some context here of what's going on, for the most part, the disciples are just observers of Jesus' miracles. They watch him heal the sick, they watch him raise the dead, and they watch him cast out demons from strangers. And this time, however, something is very different, because they themselves are in the boat when the storm begins raging, and they feel threatened, and they wonder what's going to happen. We're in danger, they say. Just imagine, though, the wind is blowing the ship to and fro, and you're in the ship. White caps are around us, not the soccer team, threatening to swamp the fishing boat. Dark and billowing thunder clouds are around us, and it's heralding more rain and more lightning. And what are these fishermen to think? Can you imagine the squalls and the waves starting to swamp the boat, and the boat is starting to maybe fill up with a lot more water than they're used to? It's possible that these disciples are actually doubting Jesus' power. It's possible that they're just so focused on what's happening around them, they forget that Jesus is with them and that he has the power. And perhaps they've just forgotten who they're with and that Jesus' power is greater than their situation. And the first thing they're thinking is, well, Jesus, don't you care about us? Don't you care about me? I'm sure we've all had that cry, because it's such an honest and doggedly painful cry. It's one that we've all perhaps exclaimed more than once. I know I have. We've all been here before. Our church has experienced this. A mother and a father cry over their son tragically hit by a car while chasing a ball across a street. A man is shot point blank in the chest, protecting a dear friend who's being held up at gunpoint. Imagine the tears of a six-year-old boy falling on a daddy's casket after being shot while on guard outside Parliament. And the question that we all might be crying out is, God, don't you care? Why me? Why my friend? Why now? Why my business? Why, God? Why my health? Don't you care? I mean, it's the timeless question. The question asked by literally everyone who has walked this earth. There's never been someone who hasn't asked it or wrestled with this aching question. Does God really care? And as the winds howled and the sea raged, the impatient and frightened disciples screamed their fear at the sleeping Jesus. Jesus, teacher, rabbi, don't you care that we're about to die? Help us. Now, before we get too hard on the disciples, we have to remember that these are seasoned fishermen, as Al had mentioned. They were used to being on the sea in the calm or in the choppy waters, and they knew when it wasn't safe to be out on a boat in the middle of a storm. So who can blame them when they saw what was going on around them? And they saw the working conditions, and they said, you know, WCB wouldn't be too happy if I was out here. You know, now, Jesus could have kept on sleeping, He could have told them to just be quiet, shut it. He could have impatiently jumped up and angrily dismissed the storm. Be gone. And he could have sat them down and given them a lecture. But he didn't. Turn with me to that passage. With all the patience that only one who cares can have, he answered their question. First of all, he hushed the storm so the shivering disciples wouldn't miss his response. And Jesus answered once and for all the aching dilemma of humanity. Where's God when I hurt? Jesus listens to them and he heals really what's going on. That's where he is. That's a reminder to myself that I need to learn that Jesus is listening and that he heals and that he cares. Jesus takes time to calm the stormy sea. The Greek version literally says Jesus rebuked the wind and he muzzled the sea. Can you imagine that picture? The personification of the ocean and the nature around him. He rebuked the wind. Stop, you. And he muzzled the sea. Cut it. That's it. That's enough. The once great windstorm is replaced by a great calm. And the repetition in the Greek is very apparent to those who can read it. And it just says what's happening here. Something great is going on. Jesus demonstrates his mastery over nature, and then he settles down to help calm and his very own disciples as they try to straighten things out in their own mind about what's going on. Imagine the flashback that they might have been having as Jesus calmly shuts the weather down and he questions them. Okay, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, why are you guys afraid? Why are you afraid? Don't you remember who I am? Don't you still have any faith? People hearing Mark's gospel would probably have heard shadows of older stories in the telling of this story. What are some of the Old Testament stories that come to mind as you hear this story told? The storm, the waves, they're in a boat. What other stories do you think of in the Old Testament? Just yell it out. Anyone? Jonah, that is one of the first ones that came to my mind. Oh man, this is like Jonah being replayed. What else? Noah, there's another one in the boat. Storm's raging. All craziness is breaking loose. And imagine creation, the creation story. Imagine how crazy that must have been. The chaos as God brings order to the chaos. Instead of doing what God told him, Jonah was fleeing in the opposite direction, right? A great storm came up and was only calmed when what happened? At his prompting, Jonah says, hey, throw me overboard. That'll calm the sea. Can you imagine what's going through the disciples' minds? Should we be like throwing this sleeping Jesus over? Like, I don't know. What about the Israelites coming out of Egypt when God made a way through the sea? Even the Psalms speak of the Creator God who rules this untamable sea and tells its rough and threatening waves to quiet down. Just take a look at with me. Psalm 65, you'll see it up on the screen here. Who stilled the roaring of the seas, the roaring of the waves, and the turmoil of the nations? Psalm 89, you, Lord, rule over the surging sea when its waves mount up. You are the one who stills them. Go to Psalm 93. The seas have lifted up, Lord. The seas have lifted up their voice. The seas have lifted up their pounding waves. Mightier than the thunder of the great waters. And mightier than the breakers of the sea, the Lord on high is mightier. He's mighty. Remember here, first of all, that the Jewish people were not really a seafaring people. They were sheep farmers. They were city dwellers. The seafaring people were more their Phoenician neighbors to the north. The sea was really a symbol of the dark power of evil for them. And this dark power of evil threatened to destroy God's order, God's creation, God's people, and his purposes. And so the sea for them is quite dark. And so when Jesus rescues the disciples from the storm, we're all witnessing something which says in concrete terms, this is God's sovereign power coming to defeat the powers of the darkness. That is, God's kingdom is at hand. It isn't quite what people had imagined, but this is the real deal. It's the real thing. It's the same power that created the world in the first place. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, don't you remember? I created the world with a word. I can still the storm with just a word. And the same power that creates and calms is resident within Jesus of Nazareth. Now, the disciples have never seen or heard anything like this before. It's one thing to deal with disease, leprosy, or death, or even demonic spirits, but to order forces of nature around. Can you imagine the waves and the wind to command the sea and the storm? This is power of a completely different order. Only God can do that. Ding. Oh, wait a minute. Only God can do that. So Jesus still waits and allows their brains to put it all together, but it's still not computing. And so Jesus, in his questioning, says, I, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John, I, Jesus, I am the one who defeats the forces of darkness and chaos. I, Jesus, am not like Jonah. I don't run away from God's command. I do what I'm told. You don't have to cast me overboard to calm the sea. I, Jesus, am doing exactly what the living God, my Father, wants. Can you imagine what his eyes are just declaring to them as he's sitting there in this boat? You know, after all the mighty acts that you've seen me do, why do you still respond in fear? After all you've heard about the kingdom, do you really think that this storm will blow the kingdom away? Can you imagine his eyes just saying, snap out of it, guys! Why are you still panicking? The great storm has given way to a great, great calm. And this is the interesting thing. The NRSV and the New Living Translation translate this so well, and they capture this repetition. This great storm has been replaced by this great calm. Because the disciples were filled with what? Great awe. This story isn't about God's raw strength and power. He's God. Of course he's got raw strength and power. This story is about the identity of Jesus. He is the Christ. He is the Son of God. Who is the one who does what only God can do? Only God can heal. Only God can raise the dead. Only God can have power over the demonic host and control nature. I.e., this Jesus is not only the Son of God, he is God. He is the one true God. He is the I Am. And he has the power to calm the storms. And so I want to conclude by saying, are you living out of fear? That's not what God wants us to do. You might be fearful for your health and well-being. Perhaps you, like me, are living in a storm of sorts. Maybe you, too, are a victim of something. Abuse, disease, bankruptcy, relational brokenness. Now, God doesn't promise to calm every storm that comes our way. That's not what this message is about. In fact, he doesn't say that at all. He does promise that he'll be with us through that storm, each and every one of them. I'm still learning this. I don't have it fully together. He's there, though, to give us the courage to walk through what we're experiencing, even if our knuckles are white, grasping the sides of the boat. And he's there to help us even when we think we're over our head. We have to remember, brothers and sisters, that the power, as Al had said, the power of evil was broken on the cross and in the empty tomb. So let us heed Mark's invitation to us to go on and wake him up. Wake up, Jesus. Don't be afraid to approach him. It's okay to pray to him in our fear and in our confusion, in our pain and in our anger. And this is, brothers and sisters, what I've had to struggle with. And don't be surprised when he turns to us and says, as the storm subsides, David, when are we going to get some real faith? When are you going to trust in me? And I believe he challenges all with that same question. When are you going to trust in me? Thanks be to God.